The Region 8 Equity Assistance Center at Metropolitan State University of Denver is guided by its mission to provide, upon request,
technical assistance, training, and staff development for school boards, school districts,
tribal education agencies, charter schools, and other responsible governmental agencies.
We strive to promote equitable education opportunities and access for all students.
We seek to improve equity, access, and participation in high-quality, research-based opportunities for education for all students.
We work to reduce disparities between and among groups where they may arise.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Equity Today, the EAC Region 8 podcast. I'm Tyler, and today I'm sitting down with Dr. Marilyn Chipman, one of the three equity specialist coordinators here on the EAC staff. She has been involved in equity for many years, and today we are going to discuss one of her favorite topics, early childhood education. First of all, welcome. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Tyler, for the invitation to take part.
Of course. So, I guess let's start at the beginning. How did you get into early childhood, and what is it?
Well, I was raised in an environment of educators, and my strongest role models growing up were my teachers, but I never pictured myself as being a teacher. I wanted to be a social worker, so my undergraduate degree from the University of Denver was in sociology and psychology. I moved to Los Angeles and entered the field of social work and did very well there, met my husband, and we had the first two of our three children. When my sons were very little, I became a stay-at-home mom, and when they entered kindergarten, first grade, second grade, I began volunteering at their elementary school. I was up there 2, 3, 4 days a week in any number of activities, from field trips to room mother to baking brownies. And as I was in and out of their classrooms, Tyler, I became absolutely mesmerized by the way that young children learn and the excitement that they bring to the learning experience. I thought, why would I ever want to go back to social work when this whole world of exciting early childhood learning is open to me? So I returned to school and earned the master's degree in early childhood education from California State University, and I have never looked back. Teaching became my passion. I moved to Colorado and continued teaching here, starting in the Aurora Public School System. And in 1986, I was shocked speechless to be nominated for Colorado Teacher of the Year, just teaching my kindergarten class. Huh. So the following year, 1987, I entered the doctoral program at the University of Denver, and there I earned the PhD degree in education, curriculum, and instruction. I was hired here at Metro State University as a professor in the Department of Teacher Education, and I became the area coordinator for, guess what? The Early Childhood Licensure Program. So this then expanded my knowledge of the field that I'd been in for so long, but I learned so many new things because I was invited to participate in just a wide array of decision-making endeavors. So this forced me to remain on the cutting edge, and I actually had the best of both worlds because as I was overseeing my students in their student teaching experience, that meant that I was back out in the elementary school classroom with the little children, just the way I had loved to do for so many years. There's a certain excitement that accrues in those to the early years of learning. School is never boring to them. They immerse themselves in everything that's around them. And so for me, teaching the young and then teaching others how to teach the young has really been a joy. So you were asking, what is early childhood? What is this that I'm talking about? Well, I have watched the field or the concept of early childhood come into its own. For many, many years past, probably for generations past, early childhood was just considered to be babysitting. It was a purview of the teenage girl next door, your Aunt Jane, any other relative that you could grab a hold of as they were walking past and say, would you watch my kids for me? And that was the vision that the public had of early childhood. The premise basically was that it did not really require any training or skill, just an available breathing body to take care of the young. But in the mid-80s, the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and specifically a woman by the name of Sue Brennkamp, became the catalyst, if you will, for the thrust to elevate the position of early childhood educator to where it is today. It has taken, as I said, from the mid-80s to the year 2013, but the growth has been phenomenal beyond anything that the public was prepared for. The early childhood educators knew that they were worth something more than what they were perceived to be, but it took a long time to convince the public of that. It hasn't been an easy road, but it's true today that all around our nation, unequivocally, people are aware that to teach the young requires more than just a willing heart. It requires preparation, and once prepared, it requires ongoing education. Sue Brennkamp came with the concept of developmentally appropriate practice, and this has been the driving theory behind early childhood for all of these years. Early childhood education encompasses the first 8 years of an individual's life, so starting from birth to age 8. In school, we say from pre-K through grade 3. Now, I was around when it went from grade 2 to grade 3 here in Colorado. Many third grade teachers were outraged because they did not want to be categorized as early childhood. Again, they were thinking that's babysitting, that's marching to music songs and giving them orange juice and graham crackers and sending them home for the day. And they felt that they were more prominent than that. However, that type of thinking has changed as the profession itself has become more recognized and valued. But if you would just think with me about the years birth through age 8, picture in your mind that little infant just born into the world, completely helpless and wordless, if you will. It's totally dependent upon someone else for everything that it needs to exist. Picture that same individual at age 8, Tyler. Can you see the difference? Can you see the difference physically, emotionally, cognitively, linguistically, and, of course, socially as well? From the infant in the cradle to an 8-year-old child, more changes have taken place than in any other 8-year time frame. If you picture with me now, for instance, age 20 to 28, there's really not that much difference going on. Age 42 to 50, that's 8 years also. There's not that much difference going on. But from birth to age 8, it's a world of wonder. And this is what early childhood education is all about.
Is so important.
That's absolutely amazing. Okay, I've got to convince you.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have asked for a better explanation. What do you think occurred in the 80s that allowed this to be acknowledged and accepted? That, like, you know, because humans have been around for a long time.
Yes.
The 80s is just, you know, moments ago in the span of human history. So what happened
that... I think that's a very valid question. In the span of human history, there again, we have a lot of writings that have come out of history.
Mm-hmm.
You look in Greek literature, literature from the African continent, literature across Europe, that extols the virtue of motherhood. Okay? Those writings were written usually by men. They extolled the virtue of motherhood because this meant carrying on the legacy of mm-hmm. the next generation, delivering sons and daughters to propagate the village, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But there was never an extolling of the care of the child.
You wanted the child to be able to work or to carry on your lineage, yeah.
Right, to
yeah.
carry on your lineage, but then there was never this extolling of the person who was taking care of the child. So it's good the mother delivered the child, and now have a son,
yeah.
and now have... But taking care of the child, well, anyone can do that. A 10-year-old girl can watch a, a two-year-old or an elderly woman who has lived many, many, many years and can no longer go out into the fields to work, we can leave the children in her care. So this is where so much, if you will, of the view of early childhood came.
Absolutely.
Through all those years. But then along came giants of theory like Piaget, Vygotsky, even Montessori more recently, who discovered that children are marvels of genius, of intelligence. And so, but those giants in the field today are building upon the work of Piaget, Montessori, Vygotsky, and others like that. And more recently, David Elkind, like that.
Yeah.
Constance Camille, all of our early childhood theorists. What it boiled down to was an acknowledgement that little children should be valued for the incredible, incredible mental capacity that they have to learn anything. And the years have proven that that is true. For instance, now we have, I guess I'm moving on into the most current White House initiative.
Sure.
On STEM.
Uh-huh.
On STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, which, of course, some people would say, well, of course you're talking middle school and high school, are you not? You're talking college and graduate school, are you not? No, we're talking early childhood, starting them already in those young years, pointing them in the direction of becoming the next scientists and engineers and creators of innovation, such as this little tiny microphone that's in front of me right now.
It seems like there's a bit of an acknowledgement, like, yeah, just acknowledging children's ability to learn. And
yes,
for some reason, for years and years, we thought that just because they didn't know things, they couldn't learn things or something.
Or because maybe they weren't taught things.
Yeah.
Again, kindergarten, I can recall, even when my children were in kindergarten, but I can also, believe it or not, recall when I was in kindergarten. It was teaching the alphabet and the recognition of numbers, not even writing them, but just simply the recognition of them, singing just sweet little songs. And I love early childhood. I love the songs, the music, the marching. But that's basically all it was. And then nap time and snack time, and it's time to go home.
It was mildly constructive daycare, pretty much.
Right.
Opposed to education.
Mm-hmm. And it was really for socialization.
Mm-hmm.
But not anymore, because we have realized that the mind of the child is so alert and so capable of learning so many different things.
I know recently you went to the Rocky Mountain Early Childhood Conference. What kind of stuff did you pick up from there in terms of childhood brain development and all this good stuff?
I think that that particular conference, the Rocky Mountain Early Childhood Conference, held here in Denver earlier this very month of March 2013, but also the National Association for Education of Young Children conference held in Atlanta last November, I believe. Yes, it was November. That conference had something like 17,000 people there. The conference here in Colorado had over 2,000. Doesn't that in itself show you the elevating of the profession?
Absolutely.
And the fact that there were workshops probably, you know, over 80, 90 different workshops on all these various topics that relate to specific areas of early childhood, that in itself shows you that the field is valued. The luncheon keynote speaker on that Friday was Dr. Patricia Kuhl. She holds the Endowed Chair for Early Childhood Learning at the University of Washington, but she's also the co-director of the University of Washington Institute for Learning and Brain Sciences. Now, would you have, 100 years ago, put those two together? Early Childhood Education Chair, but also co-director of Learning and Brain Sciences?
It sounds perfect to me.
It sounds perfect to you today, because the journey has been hard-fought and hard won.
That's awesome.
But she's internationally recognized for her research on early brain development. And this particular keynote address focused on early language development and how exposure to language actually alters the brain of the child expanding its capacity, if you will. Her PowerPoints were just phenomenal. She has many textbooks. If anyone is interested, again, it's Dr. Patricia Kuhl, K-U-H-L.
I'll link to some information on her in the show
okay.
notes for sure.
All right. But her research on the brain of the young child really has implications for critical periods in development, for bilingual education, for reading readiness, even those students who have developmental disabilities. And she also talked a lot about just the use of technology and the computer to enhance the research on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Her work was, we sat there just mesmerized. When she finally finished, I don't think anyone was really ready for her to stop.
Yeah.
So.
Could have taken several more hours of her presentation.
For sure. So her research was just phenomenal. And since she had the PowerPoint, she could show how the synapses were connecting within the brain as the child was hearing language as opposed to children who were not.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different neurological process
yes.
for different kinds of learning that
yes.
children are or some aren't capable of, I mm-hmm. imagine.
So there again, you know, those who have the concept still that, well, learning really doesn't start taking place until the child is older are missing out.
Absolutely.
They're totally missing out. So,
In terms of kind of, because it sounds like science and the education field is on board with this, but, you know, is Washington savvy with this kind of research? And where are we in terms of more popular knowledge of it?
Yes, that's a great question and certainly one that's important at this point. Dr. Kuhl herself has been to the White House on invitation to present her research.
Oh, cool.
Just recently, of course, we had the State of the Union address for 2013,
mm-hmm.
straight out of the White House, spoken by our President Obama. And he emphasized the early learning childhood initiatives that he is setting forth concerning funding. Again, especially focusing on STEM initiatives in the early years. I don't know, did I mention earlier that even on Sesame Street, Sesame Street is no longer just simply teaching letters of the alphabet, etc., but they're having segments specifically geared to STEM learning.
That's wild. I had no idea.
And part of that, of course, has to be informing the dialogue that's taking place in the White House
mm-hmm.
and around the nation. Our Department of Education Secretary Arne Duncan, he also is emphasizing this in speeches that he's making continuously, that if indeed we intend to prepare the next generation to take over the helm of responsibility for our nation, they have to start early. We cannot wait. Actually, I have a poster outside my door, which you may or may not have ever even paid attention to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a poster of little children all with caps and gowns, which, of course, the gowns are hanging long on their arms and around their feet. The caps are kind of skewed on their heads because they're a little bit too large. But it says preparation for college begins in the early years, begins in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Washington is saying. The president and the secretary of education, as well as others, are saying, we want to put more money into early learning because our nation's future literally depends on it.
We got such a good country, but if we don't treat the children better, it's not going to be able to keep being quite as good as it is. But it sounds like people in Washington know that. So
absolutely.
That's so good.
Yeah, there's a strong, strong initiative coming out of Washington for early learning.
I would feel much better putting my money towards children than towards, you know, I mean, healthcare is important too, but I feel much more confident. I think it's a much safer bet putting your money in the bank of the youth then.
Right, and I guess they go hand in hand, don't they, though?
Yeah.
Because if they're not healthy youth,
absolutely,
then they're still not going to be able to function.
Education is not as useful if you're in the hospital.
Right, or if the child is coming to school sick, hungry, whatever, all of that, you know, fighting a virus because there's no, it all goes together. As a matter of fact, you know what? I think almost that's a direct segue, if you will, into
mm-hmm.
a quote that I had. The question has been asked, who is raising America's children? Well, for all these years, we've always said it takes a village to raise a child, which of course it does. You just want to be sure that you're in the right village. Because you want to be sure who's raising your child. Mm-hmm. But literally, everybody is raising America's children because it's a responsibility of everyone. So if we want to have children who are able to reach for the moon, and I say this, you know, meaning dream big and set your goals high, but also out of the stem, reach
quite
for the
literally.
Moon figuratively. Yes, yeah. literally as well. So then the task of raising them has to involve just their family, their neighbors, their relatives, the private and public child care providers, those social institutions that exist within their communities, and, of course, the school.
Yes.
The school. Now, all of those things that I just mentioned, the family, the neighbors, the relatives, the child care providers, the social institutions, the school, they're all culturally influenced. And, Tyler, I think that's what I'd like to talk about on our next podcast.
Absolutely, yes. If you are down to come back, I would love to have you. This was a very, very on-point podcast, for sure.
Thank you so much
again
for the invitation, and I've enjoyed your comments as well.
Oh, good. I try and, you know, stay caught up with you people doing the really important stuff. I'm just giving you a venue to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I will talk to you, I'm sure, in the next couple weeks.
Okay. Awesome. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you. If you want to look up any of the people Marilyn was talking about, there will be links in the show notes. And we also have a early childhood section coming up on our site very shortly. So, either it will be up by the time this is released, or if it is not, I will go back and add the link to the show notes as soon as it is up. So, it's not up when you hear this. Check back in a couple weeks, and I bet it'll be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler.
If you would like to contact the Region 8 Equity Assistance Center, you may do so at our website, metrostate-eac.org. at 303-556-6065 or via email at eac@msudenver.edu. Listeners are also invited to join the conversation by following us on Twitter at @EACRegion8 or by liking the Equity Assistance Center Region 8 Facebook page. Special thanks to the band Northbound for the use of their song Forward in this podcast. Thank you.